Hello guys, welcome to the Blackspin Global Podcast. I am Lucy.
And I'm Eugene.
And welcome to day 5 at the US Open.
Labor Day. Happy Labor Day, Lucy.
Is Labor Day on Friday or
Sunday? I don't actually know. I'm just trying to partake.
Okay, let's say happy Labor Day weekend or Labor weekend.
Exactly, Labor Day weekend. That's the one.
Or Labor weekend. I think I keep on spelling it wrong. I keep on adding a U. You told me it's not you. There's not you in the labor.
I think the American spelling. I don't think they include.
Listen, I'm a Brit, but the least I can do is say labor in it. Like, it is what it is. Speaking of being a Brit, I am struggling to find.
To be fair, so I've just googled it. It's Monday the 2nd of September.
Oh, so it's on a Monday. Yeah, because Monday is the bank holiday.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So shout out to all of you guys. I'm not even really sure what the labor.
It's a federal holiday, apparently. So
what are they celebrating? Shout out to you guys, innit? If you celebrate.
Okay, so the works and contributions of America's labor movement. Yeah, that's quite cool.
That's big. That's nice. Hey. Shout out to that.
That's cool.
I think that's pretty dope. Yeah, we don't have that, guys. We don't have labor.
Well, we have like bank holiday.
Thing. Yeah. But yeah, hope everyone are starting to enjoy their weekend, you know, a long weekend. I know New York is going to be busy.
It's going to be popping.
That was Eugene's American accent attempt. Please comment and let us know if that was good or not. You know what? You've improved. Guys, he's been practicing. He's been practicing because the first time I was like, whoa, like,
you see, the listeners don't care, they do not care.
Believe me, as Brits, they do not care. But at least I'm giving you props, man. You've improved.
No, I appreciate that.
Sorry, guys, I'm very relaxed because I begged and begged to Eugene, can we please leave early so we can get home? So right now, I'm podding my PJs, long socks. I've washed my makeup off. I'm here with my tea. CNN is at the back.
Shout out to Laura Coates.
Yeah, shout out to her for
just
real.
Just finished.
But
If you know, you know. No, stop it now. Let's get on with this.
This is the funniest intro. Day 5. What a day.
A fantastic day.
What a fantastic
day. I say fantastic. A good day in terms of quality tennis.
That's it.
Sad we had to lose one of our guys, which we'll come on to. But
Yeah,
I think it was just a special day on Ash.
I'm with you on that one, yeah.
Just a great way to kind of, start the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Really good to see Coco Gauff, which I think that's where we're going to start. And I think, it makes sense starting there. So Coco Gauff, she beat Elina Svitolina in 3 sets.
Mm-hmm.
Lost the opening set 3-6 and then won 2 and 3, 6-3, 6-3. I thought the match was a really good match, Lucy. Like, Coco, I think Svitolina started better.
Really strong, yeah.
Yeah, like she was the one that kind of came out hot.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Coco wasn't playing badly. I just thought that I kind of knew Svitolina wasn't going to be able to kind of keep up or maintain that level.
You said that.
What did you make of that first set especially?
The first set was a lot. Like, Svitolina was actually on job. I was impressed at how quickly Coco was really trying to, you know, get her break and get us up, because the thing is, Coco was very close. She was very close. Like, whenever she was about to break or whenever she was about to, you know, about to return better and so on, she was very close. And that's why when she lost that first set, I honestly was not worried. Normally I'd be more worried because you will see from early, like, oh shoot, this is going to go bad. But she lost that first set, in a way of like, she can really get back up, because she was getting close so early. Like, normally when she's feeling like that, it's like really low, really flat. It was all credit to Svitolina, but when he came to that second serve, I was, do you know what, throughout the match, I was just extremely impressed at how well Coco was able to compose herself and find a solution so quickly. Like, it showed to you why she is a champion, which is why I tweeted, call her champion, because that was some real champion stuff right there. Do you get what I mean? Like, her serves were not as great, but she just, her movement was just amazing. Her returns were amazing. She was defending well. She was attacking well. Like, she just got to it straight away. And I was just impressed at how fast and how she just, again, composed herself and stayed calm and just was just fighting through.
Yeah.
And she knew it herself. I think she went to that match just thinking, I know I can, I know it's going to be hard, but I know I can beat her. And she did.
Yeah.
You know, she did. She only won one break point that's the second set. But the enforced errors were literally way lower, like half of what she did.
She cleaned things up.
She based, that's it. She cleaned things up. And as usual, as soon as Coco just get that breakthrough, that is it. She's done. She's clear. And that's exactly what she did. That final set, again, she was on job. Her serve got even better. It's like each set, her serve was just getting better. And I think that got into Svitolina. And I said to you, and I think I tweeted on my personal account, that although Svitolina has been getting on job ever since she's back from maternity leave, I personally feel like when it comes to facing higher ranked players, Grand Slam champions and so on, she doesn't have that dog in her.
Interesting.
And it's not in no disrespect at all. I think she doesn't know how to handle that pressure. I don't know. I remember you mentioned how you think that she doesn't have the same fitness as before, which makes complete sense. You know, she gets a lot of credit, you know, for playing so well since she's been back as a mom. And rightfully so, exactly. Mm-hmm. She won a title in less than a year. You know, the things that she's accomplished is not as easy. And again, it shows to you, which is what I've been saying about the other women and mothers who came back, including Osaka, that your body completely changed. And I feel like people underestimate that. Like, these are athletes. Like, when Osaka said on that note, my body and my mind are not connecting anymore, it's very easy for us here who are not women or not mothers who never experienced these things to be like, no, she needs to change it. She needs to do that. But still credits to Svitolina, but I think she really needs to know how to tackle those big matches and those big challenges and stuff. And I feel like she'll get there eventually.
I think it's just, I think it was a momentum thing. And yeah.
There's that as well. The crowd, I mean, come on.
Yeah, of course the crowd as well were a factor. But I think, and we tweeted it, it was very similar to like the Auckland match that they played at the start of the year. So Svitolina won the opening set in that match and then Coco went on to win in three. And it kind of followed the same kind of theme. Like, today, anyway, I thought Svitolina's forehand was like one of the major weapons, but then also it was like also quite vulnerable at times. Like, and Coco, she mentioned as well, like the last two games in that opening set, I think she lost like 8 points in a row.
Yeah,
so it was like a decisive. Well, Svitolina broke at a decisive time in that first set to then serve for it, which she did to her credit. But then, yeah, like you said, Coco is able to kind of put that behind her and reset and in the second set.
Yeah.
And then she pretty much took over from there, because in the third, she was like 5-1 up at one point.
Yeah.
And then she got broken when she was serving for it the first time. Svitolina held, and then it was up to Coco to serve it out, and she did eventually. Did Svitolina serve or did she break? I think she broke Svitolina, my bad. To win the match. But yeah, like Coco basically took over from, well, just after that first set, like you said.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if it was a thing of, because I even said to you, like, I don't know if I necessarily agree with you in terms of like how
Svitolina doesn't have that dog
in her. Or like she's not able to kind of, I don't know, match it when it comes to playing against the top players, because I don't know if she's played enough matches against the top players since her comeback. I know she has won a lot of matches, but also, like, I said this to you too during the match, like, I think it was important for her to win the first set, but if she was going to win, it was going to be in straights, not three.
Well, I'm checking now. And literally the players, as of, let's say, but since the French Open, for example,
this,
right?
This year.
Yeah. She's lost against Rybakina twice. She lost against Wozniacki, but she's not, you know, she's not a high-dead thing, but you know what I mean. She lost to Kostyuk. She's lost to Sabalenka. She's lost to Noskova. And this is what I'm saying. Like, once it gets to those big players, whether it's highest seeded or whatever, she just it just gets too difficult for her. Literally, because that's how I always remember how she's thinking. Because I've always felt like a lot of a Svitolina match when it's like, oh my gosh, she played her best. I look at the player and I'm like, oh, okay, it's not the thing. But still, you start to give credit.
Yeah,
but
no,
again, numbers don't lie. The stats are there. The names are there. Literally, the last 6 months, she's been losing to the bigger players.
Yeah.
Either way, I do think, you know, she will get there eventually. It's not easy beating these top, all those names that I mentioned anyways. I mean, come on, Sabalenka already is already tough. Do you get what
of course,
I mean?
Yeah.
But that is one of the reasons why I wasn't too scared. I don't know, I felt pretty very confident about this match. I know some people probably weren't because against Svitolina, you know, and I think the match before that, Svitolina was playing really well apparently.
Okay.
So I think a lot of people were like, oh yeah, like it's gonna be the, I was like, nah, because one is Coco Gauff, and two, when it comes to these big players, my girl is a bit stuck, but hopefully one day she'll get there, because to be fair, credit to Svitolina, she's really good. She played some great points today, but champion was in a building.
Not to spend too much time on Svitolina, but do you see her, like, I don't know, winning a slam? Because she's like late 20s now. Could be early 30s, actually. How old is she?
I honestly, she's 29.
So late 30s, late 20s, sorry.
In all honesty, I really don't. I generally don't.
Because I want to say she's been as high as number two, or she's been number one?
She has been, her highest rank is number three.
Oh, number three, okay.
But she's been really close.
Yeah.
She's been into the quarterfinals at the Australian Open 2018 and 19.
I don't think she's made a slam final.
She's never made a slam final. She's always been semi-final. And this goes back to my point.
Okay.
Honestly, when it comes to the big dogs, she just cracks and that's just it. But yeah, do you think she's gonna win
a slam?
Yeah,
probably not. But I don't like to put that on players, to be honest.
I'll be really surprised if she does.
She has won the end of year Masters one time. I think in Shanghai when it was in China, or when it was in Asia. I'm pretty sure she won. Won it 1 year.
I mean, she has.
In
she
2018
does,
or 2019, I think.
Yeah, she has 17 WTA Tour single titles, including the 2018 WTA Finals, and she's reached three majors.
So she's had a solid career.
She's had a solid career, but I think till the time she knows how to tackle those big players and those big matches, she's going to be stuck in those semi-finals. But hey, it's tennis.
Facts.
You never know. Look what happened today.
But back to Coco, though, like, yeah, I mean, we said it in terms of just her kind of match toughness when it comes to just finding a way. Like, the crowd obviously were winning her on as well, which you would expect being in America on Ash.
Mm-hmm.
That I think the stadium kind of got more and more kind of, I say, rowdy as the match was going on. Like, the stadium was filling up. And the atmosphere was kind of like matching, you know, what the action that was on the court.
Mm-hmm.
And I love when Coco kind of like gets into it and like starts kind of feeling herself. Like, because for me, that's a sign of her just feeling good. And like, she's able to kind of produce her best tennis, which I think she did.
Oh, yeah.
Especially in that third set.
Personally, I think that was one of like her best match. It's not her best, but it was definitely like up there, top five or top three, whatever you want to call it. But it definitely was simply because of how she was able to find a solution so quickly and so it was just it. That match just like reminded me why I'm such a fan and her as a player.
Admirer, yeah. No, I agree completely. It was great. Obviously, for us, this is our first time experiencing like Arthur Ashe and like what that brings.
That's true.
And, like,
that's true.
For the Americans, you can see how special it is for them.
Mm-hmm.
It was a surreal experience at times, to be fair, like, because the noise levels, and then I thought, oh wow, this can't really get any better, and it did for the second match, which we'll talk about later on. But yeah, man, shouts out to Coco, because she brought it, and she just basically rise to the occasion, like,
for sure.
which we do take for granted, considering how old she is and just like what she's already achieved in the game. So yeah, she will play Emma Navarro next, which will be a rematch of the Wimbledon fourth round, which I'm looking forward to. I'm happy we've got that, because it could have been Marta Kostyuk, but Navarro won in three sets. So
wait, why did you say it like that?
What
you said? Oh, it could have been Marta. Do you think she would have been more dangerous than Emma for Coco?
Not at all. Like I think either way, it would have been. They're not going to be easy matches, but I fancy Coco to win.
Mm.
I fancy Coco to beat Navarro, and I would have fancied her to beat Kostyuk as well. How do you see that match going against Navarro? Because obviously against her at Wimbledon, it was a straight sets win for Navarro.
Yeah, but
Coco wasn't really playing.
Coco was not playing like she was. Yeah, that wasn't her. It was a bad day in the office.
It was. But Navarro played really well, though.
Navarro played very, really well, but...
Lights out, you could say.
You know, I feel like this match will be... I see it go to three sets.
Really? Okay.
To Coco.
So you don't think straight?
No. I don't think straight, because Navarro's been playing really well. But then again, if Navarro loses the first set, I won't be surprised to go if Coco wins in straight. Because I don't know if...
Say that again.
If Navarro loses the first set, I won't be surprised if Coco wins this in straight. Okay. Because I feel like the crowd would definitely be more for Coco, and I don't think Navarro will be able to handle that.
Interesting. Two Americans, yeah.
We'll see. I feel like the Americans here definitely rooting more for Coco.
They know who their champion is.
Exactly.
I did go to her press after, actually. I asked her about, because she's not playing doubles at this tournament, which is rare. Like, she usually always plays doubles and singles. But obviously, she won her doubles slam at the French this year with Katerina Siniakova. Also, she did play doubles at the Olympics with Jess Pegula. I basically said, like, what's different in terms of like her routine, and also will she look to play doubles next year, like at the slams? And this is what she said.
I'm not playing. It does change my routine. It feels nice to have like an off day, a real off day. I don't know. I probably won't play as much anymore. Like my goal was to always win a double slam. And it's kind of one of those things where I'm just like, I don't know if I'll maybe play every now and then. I don't know if I had the motivation to go week in and week out anymore like I was doing it. And yeah, it is nice mentally to have like a break in between, like not competing and just go out and practice and work on the things. I want to do mix maybe once next year here or 1B. I feel like it could be nice to win a mixed slam to complete the cabinet, I guess.
Yeah, so I thought it was a really interesting answer. Like, obviously, she said it was nice. Well, it's nice having a proper like off day, which you kind of, I say take for granted. Players that play singles and doubles at slams, they don't really have an off day because they're playing literally every day.
Yeah.
And you do wonder like that probably will take its toll like on the body.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that now she has that day off proper,
mm-hmm.
like that's only going to help her, you would think.
Yeah.
I also thought as well, it was quite interesting how she said that, yeah, going forward, she probably won't play as much doubles in the future, which I feel kind of sad about. Well, she did say that she wants to maybe play mixed to like add that to...
which is very interesting for her to say, because people don't really... Especially top players.
Yeah.
I feel like... If they do doubles, it will always be the doubles of like, you know, their gender. Yeah.
Because I mean I don't see her maybe going for like a mixed doubles title next season. I think maybe later on in her career. That's how I'm reading it. Yeah.
Okay.
Like,
cool.
But I don't know. Maybe she will play mixed next season. Okay. Let's see.
I mean, she's had her fun with it. She collected her slam of it, and I think that's why I find it interesting that after she won that slam,
the
double slam, she's like, okay, yeah,
mission complete,
and then yeah, let me focus more singles. But
I did also ask a follow up about the Ben Francis match.
Mm.
And she's psychic because she said, yeah, it's going to five. Although she was on the fence about who was going to win.
Who was going to win.
But
don't you find it interesting that everyone we ask who's going to win...
On the fence.
That are in the industry, not fans, but like, okay. I'm talking about like people in, you know, in the actual industry, whether it's players or behind the scenes or whatnot. Yeah. They did not want to say the names.
I know you're thinking about one USTA guy in particular, but... But we're not naming names.
No names.
I hear you. But yeah, man, shouts out to Coco every time.
For sure.
And yeah, we look forward to that matchup with Emma Navarro.
Mm-hmm.
The head-to-head, actually. What is the head-to-head? Because the WTA website is messing around. So yeah, the head-to-head is actually 1-1. And they've only played each other twice. They played this year Auckland semi-final, which Coco won, and then Wimbledon in the round of 16, which Navarro won. So... yeah, we look forward. What that head-to-head's about to be broken now, mm-hmm. Which we look forward to seeing.
Yeah.
Should we move on to the men's match?
For sure.
Benny Schelps against Big Foe.
Crazy.
And what a match, Lucy.
What a match, what a day. That match actually took a lot of my energy, in a good way. Obviously, because we were there.
Explain.
Well, we were there the whole time.
To be fair, you were actually there.
Yeah,
you were on Ash probably the longest than anybody.
Yeah, exactly. Because you went to Coco's press while I was still there, because I just made the assumption that the media area would be packed.
Yeah.
Which it was a little bit at one point. Like it was, I feel like one moment it wasn't. And I wanted to just make sure that we had like, you know, our seats and stuff. Yeah, honestly. I don't even know where to start with that match.
I think that match gave us everything we expected and more.
Mm.
So you, to be fair to you and credit to you, you said it's going to five. I 100%. Fought four. And I did.
Four to who?
Yeah, we said TFO. Like I thought TFO would win in four sets. Mm. Even though the head-to-head is in Ben's favour. Yeah, it's 2-0 in Ben's favour.
Mm-hmm.
But I just felt like TFO... it's just he's in a different spot at the moment in terms of feeling good and playing well, and of course Ben Shelton is too, and today's match kind of reflected, not kind of, it did reflect that.
Yeah.
And it was just for me, Lucy, like, I was just proud like watching the points, because mm-hmm. even though it was an afternoon session, which we'll come on to later on, should have been a night session.
Mm.
The level and like the energy and just everything about it was just like prime time box office.
It was.
Do you get me?
To me personally, it became more box office vibe from, I can't remember, the second or third set.
Probably the third.
More the third. I feel like the first two sets were still like a bit, but then again, I kind of feel like it's also because maybe I was expecting something crazy from mad early, but I think the atmosphere, obviously people were taking time to get in.
Yeah, yeah.
When one match is done, a lot of people will go out, get drinks, get food, go to the toilet, get honey deuce, blah, 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 which I tried. I'll give my feedback later.
Oh, God.
and all of that. So when the stadium was like packed, and then when it was getting more intense during the match, it was like, yeah. But when he got to the, I think to me, my favorite set was the fourth set for sure. It was getting really tight. The atmosphere was there. The intensity was there. And it's really when you saw, like, you know, both of them just giving their all. But overall, obviously, super happy with the match and what it did, what it's doing to tennis in terms of like the excitement. Like the fact, I love when there are tennis matches coming and the excitement of the new, well, the younger generation and the new generation. Do you get what I mean? Because this, these are the people we need to focus on now. These are the people 100%. That we need to put, shed some light on, which is another reason why I was very disappointed to see that it wasn't a night match.
Kind of did turn into a night session.
It kind of did. It kind of did. But then again, it even makes you, yeah, I don't know. But yeah, it kind of did. But either way, night or day, the match you gave.
Yeah.
But in terms of the actual...
Some of the themes like in the match, like what kind of, I don't know, caught your attention? Because for me, it was like from the first set, Shelton didn't hit any aces. And obviously, he's one of the biggest servers on tour.
I remember you said that, yeah.
He hit his first ace in the second set. So for me, I was like, wow, like Tiafoe he's getting a good read of Shelton's serve here.
Yeah.
And just returning that kind of theme, that was a theme of the match. Like he was returning the serve of Ben Shelton really well.
Mm-hmm. I think Shelton underestimated how well he was going to return to his serves. Because even when he was talking about Tiafoe's playing style and was challenging to play against him, there was nothing about...
Before the match.
Yeah, before the match. There's nothing about the returns and stuff. It was more about, you know, how he's hitting his point, how he's moving and so on. But it just shows to you that... And it's funny because I was saying, yo, Shelton studied him. Tiafoe studied him too. Do you get what I mean? But I think... I don't even think actually Tiafoe necessarily just studied Shelton. I think he just studied himself. He just leveled up every single ability of what he's able to do. From his serves to his return to his movements...
The net, great hands.
Yeah,
like.
That's true. Yeah, he was spinning more. Like he was just really focused and very thinking. Like his aim of that match was just to win it. It wasn't to entertain anyone. It wasn't to.
I think there was a bit of entertainment there too.
No. Like, of course, there was entertainment. Yeah.
I know what you mean.
I kind of felt like. Everything around him did not even, you know, because they started interacting more with the crowd towards the end, not really at the beginning of the match as many would expect them to do. Like, they both were very focused on that match.
They were finding each other out.
Like, Shelton was even at times looking at Tiafoe, and I'm like, bro, that's your boy. But he was looking at him like, watch, Tiafoe would do something mad, and Shelton would look at him like... Oh, is that what you're trying to do?
And you know what, Lisa,
which I really loved.
Do you know what though? I kind of feel like Shelton was looking at Tiafoe to say, like, as in looking for a reaction to be like, "Raw, like, acknowledge the shot," kind of thing. Not so much like, "Oh,
nah,
we're in a battle here."
Nah,
really? Because
I got it more like we're in a battle here.
Because look at the embrace at the end, like.
No, but this is what I'm, and that's what I said. What I think. Even if there's, of course, it's going to be embracing at the end, because I think they both know at the end of the day, whatever happens with this match, we're boys, we're cool.
Yeah.
But we have to, we're both trying to win. This is the grand slam we're talking about.
Definitely.
And it's at the US. So yeah, we're putting all that friendship shit at the side and we are going to play a good match and we're going to try and win this. So yeah, of course it's going to be embracing and of course they're cool and they're boys, but... I love how they did not, because I've personally said my issue with the ATP is that there's too much buddy, friend.
Listen, man, we could all get along, man.
We can get along, but I feel like the friendships they're just too much. Like, look, at Federer and Nadal did not become close to like towards the end of their career.
There was always respect there.
There was, hold on. There's different between respect and being buddy buddy though. I'm talking about like there'll be one small thing and it'll be like, oh, sorry, oh, I'll do it. Oh, no, man. Like, there was one point where Shelton, like, was tripped and on the floor. Tiaf didn't even look at him. He didn't even turn around. This is what I'm talking about. Because we're in a battlefield right now. Oh, right now, you and me, we're not friends. Cold we're not blooded. Boys. That's what I'm saying. Federer and Nadal were not like, there was respect. They were cool. But even them, they even said it. Like, literally, it's as they got older, that's when they started becoming closer. And they both became friends, mainly because of how they respected their game, how much they, how much yeah, no, hunger, and how much
to
be fame. Honest,
it's similar to like when you're, well, like to bring it back to like normal day life, you kind of get closer to like work colleagues after of course. You've left.
Yeah, of course, yeah. You get me? So, but I feel like, and look what that did to that match today. I feel like if there were two buddy-buddy, you would have not ruined the vibe, but it would have been a bit different. Do you get what I mean? And that's why I think that's one of the reasons why I feel like the WTA matches at times are just, you know, 10 out of 10, because a lot of these women do not like each other. And it helps. It is what it is. But honestly, with the match, you know, we found out also Shelton had like the fastest serve speed so far in the tournament.
Yeah, okay.
143 miles per hour. I think Opelka is like 142. The thing that's so impressive is that Shelton also had that at Wimbledon with Petri Perica, and I think it was 140, just like 1 or 2 kilometers below.
Miles per hour.
Miles per hour. Sorry, yeah. I'm tired. Miles
tired,
per
bro.
Hour. But
yeah, on Shelton's stats, I thought the stat sheet read quite impressively despite him losing. So yeah, he hit 23 aces in the end. And 63 winners, which were like match highs.
But he did have a lot of unforced errors.
Yeah, and that's kind of what.
But the thing is about unforced errors. What I find interesting is that, if I remember correctly, Shelton had like, let's say between like 50 something unforced errors, and Tiafoe had like 27. Right. Normally, or on paper, you would think, because at times Tiafoe has won matches, but his unforced errors were really high.
Yeah.
I find it interesting how in this match, it was the other way around.
So Shelton had 58 unforced errors, yeah, Tiafoe 27.
27, exactly. Mm. And usually you'll be thinking, oh yeah, no, Tiafoe will be the one with the high unforced errors and Shelton with the lower one. So it was just, and that's why I want to go back to what I was saying earlier, is that Tiafoe was just getting, how can I explain it? Every skill that he has, he's just perfect with it.
Yeah.
And that's just what it was.
No, and you said it
the
before.
The fact that he played 5 sets and he had 27 unforced errors, that's crazy.
And also, yeah, he played the bigger points well. Like, mm-hmm. And that's kind of what showed. So
exactly.
He only faced 7 break points.
Exactly.
Whereas Shelton
another thing that really impressed me is I remember he even hit the box as well, like where the towels you put. You didn't even see
it. In frustration, yeah. Yeah, frustration.
At that moment, I thought, oh, shoot.
Yeah, we lost
this
him.
This is it. Yeah, we've lost him. The fact that he was able to compose himself and, you know, literally just can carry on with the match. You know, he was down 6-0 with the tiebreak, went to 6-5, although he'd lost that set. You know, he still, the next set, he carried on and he won it.
Two significant things you mentioned there. That tiebreak, to be down 6-love.
Mate.
And then, yeah, to bring it back. And then I think, Shelton in the end, he served it out with an ace. And I was like, that's just, in a way, that was so rude. It was rude of Shelton to do that. But I think that was a key moment, Lucy, in terms of for Tiafoe, the fact that he was able to kind of find his way back into that tiebreak.
Mm-hmm.
It gave him some momentum, I think, going into the following set,
mm-hmm.
which he then took,
yeah.
6-4. But yeah, everything you said there is like spot on in terms of like just how the match was played and the level of both of them, man. For me, like, again, it should have been a night session match, and most of our followers are saying the same thing.
Everyone was saying the same thing, bro. Like, The only people that did not care for that is Djokovic fans and the people who got day tickets. That's literally it. But everyone else was literally saying that should have been a night match. And I don't know. In things that I'm really curious to know the real reason. I know everyone's making speculations. The number one speculation, as I said in the last pod, was the fact that it was... Do you think that could have been the case, that he only likes to do the night matches?
Listen, honestly, I don't know. I'm just being real. I have no idea. I think there is a thing of like top players being able to kind of...
decide.
Request. Yeah. And I say top players, he's a former champion. Like, so I wouldn't be surprised if they kind of give him...
But don't you think that's a problem, though?
A little bit.
Especially considering the type of match this is.
A little bit.
For me, I just find it insane. Two Americans, Labor Weekend, the most anticipated match of... Like, people were talking about this.
I mean, they said it themselves. Ben said in press that, and we'll play it for you. But, yeah, he basically said that him and Tiafoe were speaking about it in the locker room, like, days before, saying, oh, yeah, it's gonna be a night match.
Yeah.
And Shelton... would have preferred to play at night.
Wait, just play the.
So this is what you said.
No, I don't mind either way. I know that me and Fo both definitely wanted this to be a night match. You know, we talked about it in the locker room either last night or this morning. I forget. It was like, yeah, even if it was on Louis, we would have rather been in that night slot. Just, you know, we played here at night. 1 year ago, it feels right, you know, Friday night, Ben versus Foe. I'm sure that he's going to get a night match here in his next match, probably. But yeah, I think we would have... It was still an unbelievable atmosphere, but I think playing at night is a little bit different and special at the U.S. Open, for sure. I'm probably just a little butthurt because I didn't get to bring out my night session kit, you know?
Yeah, so Ben, as he said there, that both of them were kind of expecting to play at night. And he was like, yeah, even on Louis Armstrong, it would have still been a crazy match.
I don't think that would have... I know you mentioned that earlier, but I don't agree
on Louis. Man.
No, I like Louis, but the problem is that would have been a whole fan... That's more of a health and safety risk thing. Like, two big American... We're talking about the two of the biggest American... two of the biggest American players right now on Louis Labor Weekend. Everyone will be there. That would have been security at the US Open having to deal with too much. I think that's nuts. Why, but... Exactly. Hence why it should have been an Arthur Ashe, but she just should have been on at night. Personally, I do believe the whole, like, because they do in other Grand Slams, you know, and there's some players that we've seen always play at a specific time because that's their preferences. But at the same time, with what we had today, this should have been a night match. Honestly, nothing to say at all. Like, I have no words. Like till this day, I'm very surprised, and I think that would have, especially that we had to deal with this being such an early round. You know, it's just I have another theory, but I'm not gonna say it on the pod.
You and these.
I know. Me and my theories. Oh, I have a theory, but I'm not gonna say it on the pod.
You can't do that.
Should I say it?
You can't. You have to.
Okay, let me say it. I think it was more of a commercial decision as well. It's either Djokovic or it's also a commercial thing. One thing that I noticed when I was watching the match, a lot of the suites were empty.
Okay.
The suites brings in money. I think also US Open has been doing the most because they're trying to make the money back from what they lost at the during COVID year. I think people are underestimating how much money. COVID
was like 4 years ago. This is what I'm just about to say.
Okay. People are underestimating how much of these businesses they've lost money from COVID. Like, we're talking about sponsorships, we're talking about ticket sales, we're talking about deals that have probably costed them a lot of money that they've lost on because they were not able to play the matches properly, which is why a lot of these tournaments were trying to run during the lockdown time where there was no fans at that US Open. Really and truly, they should have not played that Grand Slam, but they did because money. That is what it is, because some contracts have been signed. You have to follow them
legally. Money I have to make.
Exactly. There's money to make. I personally think it was a thing where they were looking at, hey, we need to make sure that these day ticket sales go up. People are coming in from the suites to the VIPs to the Honey Deuce and everything. US, I don't know if people have actually noticed the last year and this year, these Grand Slam, especially the US Open, been doing the most to be money hungry. And I think a lot of it has to do with, one, the economy at the moment is not the best. True. Especially in America, post-COVID has been a hot mess right now. So you're thinking of trying to make money for that. You're trying to make the money that you lost from COVID.
It's an interesting theory, definitely.
I think it's either a commercial thing, where it's like, hey, we need to get these suits, because it was a lot empty. I was actually surprised. I was looking around. I was like, rah. That was out of all of the days, that was when it was the most empty.
I also do feel like the suites kind of, they fill up more in the evening.
And that's what, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So that's what I'm saying. So if you put that during the day, it's like, oh, okay, let's use the suites for the day. Do you get what I mean? Because them suites, we're talking about, six, five figures. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Do you get what I mean? So it's either that, a commercial decision, or it's a decision because Djokovic said he wants to play at night. That is my theory. US Open, don't take away
more
our accreditation.
More on him in a second.
But yeah, that's my theory. But guys, come in our comments and let us know if you think my theory is right or not.
Another great thing about that match, seeing Christopher Eubanks do the on-court interview.
That was just amazing.
That was huge. Obviously, Christopher Eubanks is obviously still a player, ACP Tour player. He lost in the first round this year, unfortunately. But yeah, he's working for ESPN, I want to say, during this tournament. And yeah, he was the one that interviewed TFO after the match, which was just, it was just great to see, man. Like, I think you said...
I wish it was quick. I wish it was he was there on for longer, but obviously they had to rush.
Yeah, I think he just asked him the one question, to be fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just a great sight. Like, Coco Gauff winning that first match, and then we had, yeah, these two black brothers playing or following her, giving us, like, high-quality entertainment. And then, yeah, Eubanks was the one that was asking the question, doing the on-court interview at the end, like... Mm-hmm. Just a great day for us.
For sure.
And we hope to see more of that.
Mm-hmm.
TFO, actually, we both went to his press conference. He was really good and press, as usual.
Mm-hmm.
But we asked him about the... Because Ben said that this match was probably the best anyone had returned his serve.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, this is what TFO said in response to that.
I mean, I think it was... I mean, returning has been a thing I've been... Since I started with D-Wood, it's something that he's really been focusing on, for sure. Before we started, he was like, look, like, you play your return games way too relaxed. Like, we need to address that. And I'm turning much better, man. I'm making a lot more returns. I'm making guys play, and it's funny. Like, you know, you feel suffocated after a while knowing you're going to play each and every point. And, you know, you saw a little bit at the end, like, he was getting a little frustrated and going for broke and, you know, not wanting to stay in points. But so, yeah, I mean, that's something I really focus on today for sure. You know, make him play as much. Obviously, he's going to hit some rockets. He's not going to be able to touch. But if it was on my racket, just make it and let's put on the running shoes and let's play.
So, yeah, no, really interesting answer from TFO. He kind of said that, yeah, it's credit to David Witt as well in terms of the coaching setup, because that's something they've been working on. And he does have a strong return, like, in terms of his general kind of play,
mm-hmm.
which we kind of, I don't think, gets acknowledged enough. But yeah, we saw it in full effect for this match. So hopefully that's something he can use kind of going forward, because the next person he's playing is a big server.
Who's that?
And it's not Novak Djokovic. Or Novak Djokovic, as the Americans say. I love how the Americans say Djokovic. But yeah, Novak has been knocked out by the Australian, informal Australian, we should say, Alexei Popperin, the 28th seed. Is he the 28th seed? I think he's the 28th seed.
Who would have thought? And because of that, guess what? Daniil Medvedev is the only former men's single champion left.
Oh, wow. That's nuts. No, Sinner. Oh, you mean in that half?
In that half.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Wow. I think
and US Open, has Sinner won US Open?
Has Sinner won the US yeah. Open? No.
Australia. Yeah, exactly. So I think more for like this US Open, yeah.
That is mad. Wow. So that's kind of the matchup nobody kind of saw coming, really.
Honestly.
Looking forward to it.
Honestly. To be fair, though, So my pick was Carlos to win.
My pick was Novak. Wild season.
I did not get Novak because... And also, another thing you need to know is the three Olympic champions, or should I say Olympics winners in tennis for the men's, are out. Musetti, out.
Or medalists. Medalists, yeah.
Out. Carlos, out.
Crazy.
Djokovic, out. And the ones who are still through are the ones that, you know, either didn't go too far or just didn't go. Mm. And it just shows to you how that was probably a good decision. You know, there's some people that were not agreeing with that. They were saying that players were being extra and blah, blah, blah. Listen, if you think about it, in a space of 3 months, these people went from clay to grass to clay to hard court.
Mad.
Like, that's really insane. So, I mean, shout out to Popperin till now, because now I'm with my boy, Francis Tiafoe. But this is wide open.
This is well, let's go, big foe. I love those chants.
No, but honestly, Novak being out now is crazy, though. But no, I think he's cool. I mean, hey, it's enough, man. Come on, let the new guys get it.
I love it, man.
I love it. I've always said it. I've been saying it even when Federer was about, you know, he's my favorite out of the big three, but I've been saying it for a moment, like, hey, we need to let the new gen coming in. But yeah, it looks like we're going to have Popperin versus Tiafoe. How do you think that's going to go?
I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to say, I can see it being straight for Tiafoe, but I'm going to say 4 sets.
Okay.
I fancy Tiafoe to get, he's going to do it.
Okay.
And it's just a great opportunity, Lucy, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Like, the quarterfinal will probably be, it'll be out of Andre Rublev or Grigor Dimitrov. Again, 2 players he's beaten before.
Mm.
Like, I am really looking forward to
this.
Listen,
guys, hey, Tiafoe literally beat Nadal before.
And it's like getting to the latter stages now. Like,
and if he can play them type of matches, and he played a match like Ben, and you know, he even said it himself in his press, like when he's here around these times, you know, he's playing really well. So, yeah.
I'm liking it. So we look forward to that. Well, how do you see it going?
I'm with you as well. 4 or 5 set to Francis.
So you think a 5-setter again?
4 or 5.
Nah, it's going to be 3 or 4.
Okay.
So, yeah, we look forward to that one, and that will be on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
We did have a defeat today, Lucy.
Unfortunately.
So, Madison Keys, she fell to Elise Mertens, the 33rd seed, in 3 sets. Mm. We're going to be honest, we weren't there for that, because we left the grounds early today. We did see that Keys... Was she up a break in the second? No, she wasn't. It was just on. It was a tight match, basically.
Mm, from the look of it.
Mertens did have the trainer come out in the middle of the first set. But yeah, she was able to carry on clearly and you know, go on and to win the match.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I knew that match was going to be a tough one because Mertens could be great.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah. to be honest, it would have been difficult for Keys to even make it to the second week, considering, you know, the lack of matches, yeah. Exactly. And she would have had to be extremely intense like the other times. And yeah, would her body even be able to do it again, considering that, you know, she just got injured? But
the hamstring injury, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. So, yeah, it is unfortunate, but credits to her for coming back. Mm. The rounds that she played right before US Open, not like she played a lot or played for long or anything. Like, she retired literally in one of them. So for her to make it all the way to the third round and still come to the US Open, and she bageled a player literally her last round. So, yeah.
Yeah, tough one for Maddie. Mm. But yeah, well played to Mertens.
Yeah.
We also had some fallen soldiers in the doubles, Lucy.
That was more of a shock than anything else.
Which we'll just quickly run you through. So my picks to go deep, Alicia Parks and Camille Osorio, they lost today in straights. I want to say 2 in love. 6 seeds. This is also a big surprise, actually. 6 seeds, Jasmine Paolini and Sara Rani, they also lost to Diane Parry of France and Harriet Dart of Great Britain. And all 4 of them are wearing the same kit, which is quite funny. Robin Montgomery and Claire Vianguinu, they also lost today, as did the Cordy sisters. So yeah, they're all second round defeats. We did get a good win in the mixed doubles. So Taylor Townsend and Donald Young got their mixed doubles campaign off to a winning start, which was good. So yeah, we look forward to seeing more of them. I'm hoping to catch some of their matches, actually. So hopefully we'll be able to see.
I think they're playing tomorrow, right?
I think so, yeah. So, yeah, and kind of moving on to day 6 now. So we've got Paolini opening play on Louis Armstrong against Julia Putintseva. And, yeah, Gabbio Diallo. Caught myself. He's third on. And that will be against Tommy Paul, as we spoke about yesterday. So, yeah, Lucy, that's day 5 wrapped up. We head into day 6. Looking forward to, yeah, some good matches and hopefully some two wins, possibly.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely expecting Paolini to get the job done against Putintseva.
Mm-hmm.
Giallo, that's going to be tough against Paul, but he's got nothing to lose.
Mm.
Biggest match of his life to date.
Mm-hmm.
So you just hope he'll be able to kind of go in with no fear and just, yeah, man, play his heart out and see where that takes him.
Yeah.
So, yeah, let's wrap it up there. So, guys, thank you so much for listening. And I know you all enjoyed today because the Twitter's have been going crazy. Like, yeah, all the the mentions and, like, just the posts. It's been fun. Fun reading them all and, like, seeing pictures and stuff. So keep that all coming. And, yeah, we look forward to catching you up on day 6. Until then, take care.